San Francisco.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, we're going to be talking about tips on how to avoid and protections for victims of elder financial abuse. My guests are Tara Heumann, Deputy District Attorney of the Elder Abuse Unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, Shannon Morgan, Health Services Manager, and Nicole Fernandez, Supervisor of Training and Outreach, San Mateo County's Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Team, and Daniel Murphy, Elder Abuse Litigation Attorney and member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. This segment is funded by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialists of the State Bar, by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the San Francisco Bar Association. This is also, by the way, we're doing this program live on Wednesday, April 27th, and the fourth Wednesday of the month, I want all of you to know, is our regular Call a Lawyer night where we have a number of attorneys in the conference room here who will take your calls off the air, no obligation on your part. That number is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. For those of you who listen to the live program, you'll be able to talk with my guests in about half an hour, and I'll give you that number if you are still with us. Okay, here we are, and what I want to do is ask you, Dan Murphy, what is the most important issue you feel for someone who may well be a victim of either an elder abuse scam, financial scam, or whatever?
Well, I would say that once they've been scammed, the most important thing for them to do is to report it to the authorities or to seek help. Now, the State Bar of California has created the seniors contact card, which contains all the telephone numbers and the agency names of people that you might need to call if you are abused.
How do you get that, Dan?
You can contact the State Bar at their website, which is www.calbar.ca.gov. Or you can call them at 415-538-2000. I might have that telephone number wrong. I'm sorry.
I think it's 415-538-2100, I think. And that may well be a way for them to get it. And you call it what again? The Seniors Educating Seniors Project what?
Contact card.
Contact card. Okay. What about the situation, though, if let's say someone is being cared for by a caregiver or maybe an adult child, and the older person believes that, I feel kind of uncomfortable with my caregiver, or I'm uncomfortable with my child. I think my child's taking advantage of me. And I think in my experience as a deputy DA, I have found that older persons are very reluctant to say anything negative, certainly about their kids. I don't know about their caregivers. Dan, you handle these cases on a civil basis. What would you recommend? What should they do? I mean, if they feel reluctant, they're embarrassed, they're shocked by what's going on, how can you help them? What can you urge them to do?
Well, like I said, I think the first thing they need to do is to reach out and report this abuse and try to stop it. You've got to stop the bleeding, as we call it. I think perhaps we should talk just a moment about why seniors are targeted, because this is a very, very lucrative field for the abuser. For one, elders have worked their whole lives to collect assets. They are have the most money in society. So it's a very logical place to start if you are out to grab somebody's money. Seniors are very trusting. They, by definition, are from a different age when things were perhaps more friendly. And there's so much shame involved in being abused. Once you're taken advantage of, I think you feel stupid, and you don't want people to know that. No one wants to admit. that his or her cognitive skills are declining. And that may well be the reason that it happened. And finally, fear. It could lead to other risks. This is an unknown area. So if they take the first step, they could be fearful that something they don't even know will happen to them. So my first piece of advice is report it. Let somebody know. Don't keep it to yourself.
Tara Heumann, you're doing prosecuting of criminal cases. What thoughts do you have with regard to what we've just been talking about?
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for having us here. I definitely think that reporting is key, and people are reluctant to report for all of the reasons that Daniel mentioned. It has been shocking to me over the last 2 years that I've been working in this assignment how much money elders are willing to forego to avoid contact with the police, to avoid the possibility of coming to court and testifying against a family member or even a caretaker or even a relative stranger, even someone who's just come into their lives, because it's so shameful to them. I think that Nicole and Shannon can speak more to the resources that we have through Adult Protective Services, but that is the first place that I would recommend going in terms of making a report. But the elder doesn't have to feel that he or she has the sole responsibility for reporting this or for seeking help. It's always a good idea to go to another friend, family member, someone that you trust. It could be a member of the clergy, anybody, and confide in that person what you think might be going on, and it's possible that that person can help you make a report to the right authorities.
One of the things that I'd like all of you to know is throughout the state of California, depending on what county you're in, you could find, if you are having a problem, the unit that you might want to get in touch with your respective county might be either called the Aging and Adult Services Office, Adult Protective Services Office. But if you call the basic county number for your county and say, I'm having a problem, I'm an older person, what agency can you transfer me to? This is the way to do it. I'm wondering if you would, Shannon and Nicole, talk a little bit about this new unit that both of you are involved with, which is San Mateo County's unit. It's kind of like an example of what should be done throughout the state of California, which is not being done, as I understand, let alone throughout the United States. And the unit in San Mateo County is called the Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Team. Shannon, do you want to start?
Yes.
Let's know what's going on.
Thank you, Chuck. EDAP, better known as Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Team.
We'll call it now EDAP from now on. All
yes,
right.
EDAP.
Okay.
It's a new program that's through Aging and Adult Services through the County of San Mateo Health System. And I oversee that program. It's a partnership with Aging and Adult Services, the District Attorney's Office, County Council's Office, as well as law enforcement. And our primary goal is to identify, address, and investigate abuse reports with a special emphasis on financial abuse. We have a three-pronged approach where we're staffing social workers and deputy public guardians to go out and investigate reports that may come from banking institutions, that may come from other mandated reporting sources such as law enforcement agencies, medical providers. Anyone who's in a health and safety profession is usually mandated to make a report. And so we have social workers that are going out to investigate. They're partnering with law enforcement agencies to first mitigate the issue, to protect seniors or dependent adults, to access resources, and to work with law enforcement so that they can forward cases to the district attorney's office for prosecution.
What I'd like to do is let you know that this is our Call a Lawyer night. Again, this program is live April 27th. We have several attorneys in our conference room. You can talk with them, no obligation on your part. 1-800-525-9917. They're there right now, 1-800-525-9917. for immigration law, family law, workers' compensation law, criminal law, landlord-tenant law, estate planning and probate, and tax law. And for workers' compensation law, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, Alice O'Sullivan, will be available until 9 p.m. This is Pacific time today, April 27th. And let me give you her phone number. It is 510-333-3314. 510-333-3314. Call a lawyer is 1-800-525-9917. Let me come to you, Nicole, please. What comments do you have about this?
Specifically, let me reference what Shannon was
saying.
Yes. I'm really proud to be a part of this new unit in San Mateo County, and being a part of such an innovative program that's tackling such a huge issue is rare. I am in a unique situation because my full-time position is basically going out there and empowering seniors and others through education.
You go out and talk with groups, is that it?
I absolutely do. We have multiple scheduled in many different sorts of venues all over San Mateo County. Churches, senior centers, libraries, but we also work with those who are mandated reporters or those who work with elders and dependent adults.
Now, if I may for a moment, a bank, if someone in a bank, a teller or an assistant manager or anyone who's an employee, kind of gets a feeling that, gee, I know that this woman who's coming to get some money here is the caregiver for Mrs. So-and-so. Mm-hmm. The bank has a mandatory obligation to contact what agency, if any, a police department or what?
They are obligated to reach out to the Adult Protective Services.
I see. To the county.
To the county.
And that's statewide.
Yes.
Okay.
That is statewide. Uh-huh. So they need to complete a form that is called an SOC 342, which you can access from the Department of Social Services website. That's specifically for banks.
I see.
For all other mandated reporters, including the clergy, doctors, social workers, nurses, other individuals who directly work with seniors, they complete a form called SOC 341.
Mm-hmm.
And in San Mateo County, you fax it into a central number that you can access from our website, which is smchealth.org/elderabuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be picked up by a social worker, and it'll be evaluated and assigned out for investigation.
Can you tell us, Shannon and Nicole, are there other counties in California that are doing what your unit is doing, or is this such a new venture that yours is an example of what we hope other counties would copy?
There are other counties that have the same format or the same structure. Santa Clara County has a FAST team.
FAST?
Yes. Financial.
Do they move fast?
I would hope so.
We hope so, yeah.
We would hope so. And they're modeled, or EDAP is modeled after them in some ways.
I see.
It's a little, there's some differences, but the primary goal is a multidisciplinary approach.
I see.
I wanted to piggyback on what Nicole had said with regards to completing and faxing in the SOC. SOC stands for State of California Forms. It is a state requirement that these forms are turned in or submitted to Adult Protective Services within 2 business days.
Mm-hmm.
Calls to Adult Protective Services can be done immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have an individual who can make a call to a person within Aging and Adult Services to make the referral over the phone, and then that's followed up with a faxed SOC form.
Really?
It's important to follow those guidelines because those are mandated reporting mm-hmm. guidelines.
What about this? Older persons, if I may, if you don't mind, I think as people get a little bit older, they start to become somewhat vulnerable. This is a real problem, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And for one thing, they're vulnerable because if their kids are taking advantage of them, they don't want to rile the rest of the family.
Mm-hmm.
What recommendations do you have for someone who's starting to be not what he or she was in terms of being keen-minded? Dan, what would you say?
Well, I think it's important for the elder to have contacts with the outside world. I mean, literally, so many cases have started out with this isolation. So if you're if you're out there and you don't ever see anybody and you're in your room all the time, you know, it's the isolation that is helping to put you in that situation. So
try to have some kind of contact with others, I think you're saying.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we one of the indicators of undue influence and fraud in this area is isolation.
Yeah, I would
think so. It makes it easier for the abuser to keep the victim quiet. And every situation is different, so I can't really give you a rule, but...
Before we went on the air, and I don't know whether it was you, Dan, or you, Tara, gave me a statistic that 90% of, let's say, elder financial abuse, or maybe it was, pardon me, Nicole, excuse me, was related to children.
The statistic is that 90% of financial abusers are either a relative or a caregiver.
I see. Okay.
Which greatly holds up the amount of reporting that occurs in this. And another statistic out of the New York study on elder abuse that came out a few years ago is that for every one report of elder abuse, 24 go unreported.
I'm sure that's the case. Mm-hmm. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
It is.
Tara, please.
Yeah. You're talking about isolation. So two things that I'm thinking in response to that. One is, in the community and the society in which we live, elder isolation is, I don't want to say natural or normal, but it's too commonplace. Mm-hmm. People retire. They may lose a spouse. They may be living alone. People aren't as close to their neighbors as they used to be. And as people age, they lose mobility. It's harder for them to go out into the community. So some of that is happening as part of the natural course of events, as people get older in our society, and we really need to make an effort to reach out to the older people who live in our communities and just check on them and be a friend and be a neighbor to those people. But isolation is also part of an abuser's toolkit, and abusers will take active steps to isolate an elder from other people, and they can do that to exert more influence. Basically, the abuser becomes increasingly important and central to the elder's life, and they create a situation where the elder is dependent on them, maybe literally dependent for care or finances, or maybe just dependent socially because everybody needs social interaction. And if the abuser has taken away the phone, as a case that Daniel and I worked on together last year. An abuser had intercepted a cell phone that siblings had sent to the elder and changed the home phone number and literally made it extremely difficult for the elder to be in touch with other siblings, the elder's other children. So we see that, and we just see a lot of either caretakers or sweetheart types of people ingratiating themselves to the elder and just sort of shoving other contacts and other people off to the side.
But it's very difficult for the elder who's subjected to that to do anything about it. So what would you recommend?
Right. It is very difficult, and once an abuser gets too close to the elder or gets too much authority or power, it's very hard to undo because you're working with somebody with maybe impaired cognition and limited mobility. So it is best to try and avoid these situations, to try and prevent them. And that requires a healthy dose of skepticism, and it requires children and neighbors to be checking on their elders and to have their antenna up, looking for people who may be looking to take advantage.
I agree with Tara.
Yes, Shannon, please.
I agree with Tara. The perpetrators are very crafty. They're doing their homework. They are researching this. They know how to target their victims. And so when we have individuals who are isolated, who are not having a lot of social interaction, it makes them more vulnerable. But for someone who's trying to make a difference, I think it's also important that first encounter with the elder to explain, I'm concerned about the way you're handling your finances. I'm concerned that you're taking these phone calls and you're sending money. It's important how you interact with them and not to cause more shame, not to lecture them, because that will shut them down. And for me, coming from a social work background, that first encounter to bring up concerns can make or break it.
All right, this is our Call a Lawyer Night. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, April 27th. If you have a question in a number of legal areas, the number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. The areas covered are immigration law, family law, workers' compensation law, that's Alice O'Sullivan, 510-333-3314. She'll be available until 9 p.m. Criminal law, landlord-tenant law, estate planning, probate, tax law, real estate. Also tomorrow, I'll let you know in a little bit of a while that one of the certified specialists in bankruptcy law will talk with you on his 800 number tomorrow, Thursday, April 28th. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on tips on how to avoid and protections for victims of elder financial abuse. This is a very large area. I'll let you know who my guests are. Daniel Murphy, who is an elder abuse litigation attorney. He's a member of the executive committee of the trusts and estate section of the State Bar of California. We have two persons who are here from a new team, which is called the San Mateo County's Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Team. And Shannon Morgan is the Health Services Manager, and Nicole Fernandez is the Supervisor of Training and Outreach. And last but certainly not least, someone I've worked with over the years is Tara Heumann, Deputy District Attorney in the Abuse Unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Let me put this out, because this is our few minutes left in our statewide version of the program, which is recorded and then sent out to 15 other stations in California. And they will air this program next week. But what about, Tara, if I can pose this to you, what tips do you have for the elders that they should be aware of, aside from right now we've been talking about looking out for caregivers, we've been talking about maybe some of the kids, their own children who are taking advantage. What other tips do you have for them?
So there are tips that I would give specifically to elders, and then there are just as importantly tips that I would give to adult children or grandchildren of elders. If you care about your loved one and you want to make sure, do what you can to protect their assets and just their well-being. Maybe I'll start there with a message to those of you who care about your elders and want to look out for them. So one thing I would say is, if you are employing a caretaker, which so many of us do, somebody who's going to be in the home with your elderly loved one, either full-time or part-time, please be involved in setting the terms of that caretaker's employment. So that means committing to writing, and it doesn't need to be formal, just something handwritten or typed out. How will that caretaker be paid? How much? How often? And in what fashion? By check? Cash? Is that person to have access to a debit card or a Visa card for any reason? Is that person allowed to sign checks for the elder for any reason? What's the procedure if the caretaker needs access to funds and, you know, doesn't have cash on hand? How is that person to contact you to get access to money that he or she may legitimately need to do something to help the elder? So many caretakers are engaged in grocery shopping for the elder or picking up medical supplies, and those things are great. Or they're driving the elder and they need to put gas in the car. So it's not as though any spending by caretakers is wrong. It's just you need to hammer out the terms of that so that later you're not looking at a situation where there's ambiguity about what that person was allowed to do. And the other thing I would recommend is you want to just be mindful of where the elder has his or her money and be monitoring that on a regular basis.
You would have to have some kind of an authorization from the elder to go to the bank.
Yes.
So the bank knows that you whether you are the child, grandchild, or whoever you are, has the authority to do this.
Correct. So that means you're either a co-signer on the account or you have power of attorney. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can set up with someone like Daniel in advance. And it's always smart to think about those kinds of things in advance before someone has cognitive decline or before someone has a health emergency. You can't prevent 100% of abuse. Unfortunately, we can't watch over our elders 24/7, and we do have to trust other people to help them and to work with them, but we can catch problems early. If you're logging into a bank account, you'll catch check fraud sooner rather than later, and it can be very difficult to recover stolen money. So the sooner you can spot a problem, the better.
Dan, let me ask you this. You're an elder abuse litigation attorney. You deal with estate planning issues also. What comments do you have for someone if an elder person is beginning to be honest with him or herself, I'm beginning to be not as keen-minded as I used to be, or it's the child who isn't trying to rip off his or her own parent, or a grandchild who is not trying to rip off his or her own grandparent, what kind of estate planning, basic estate planning, should someone be thinking about?
Well, Chuck, the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar has a program. We run a program called Educating Seniors.
Yes.
And we educate seniors on several issues. One, the first issue is how to approach making an estate plan. What is an estate plan and mm-hmm. who do you go to? And then the second point is how to avoid being ripped off financially. It's that common that those are our two It's that common that elders are ripped off, that those are two goals mm-hmm. for educating seniors. That mm-hmm. should tell you something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what would I tell them?
Well, let me do this because I want to get this out. The State Bar of California has a number of very fine pamphlets. And if you would like one of them, you can go to the website, either www.calbar.ca.gov. The Board of Legal Specialization also has wonderful pamphlets that are free, and they'll send them to you. So keep in mind www.calbar.ca.gov, and you can, if you have a computer, you can access that website and find out what is available that they will send to you, no charge whatsoever, and it's great in a whole bunch of different areas of the law. And if you are interested in actually a legal specialist, you will find that on the left side of your screen, on your computer screen. A great way to find a legal specialist is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. All right, everybody, this is now where I want to let you know that you can call in, ask my guests questions, make comments if you like in the area of elder financial abuse. I would hope you would not be bashful. The number, and this is a toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255 if you would like to call in. It is also our Call a Lawyer night where we have a number of really fine people who are here. I must tell you a secret. They're here because I offer them great pizza.
The best pizza.
In any event, that's not why they're here. They are very gracious people who give of their time, and most of these people have done this for years. And here they are. For immigration law, Gene Swerdlov. Family law, Janet Frankel. Workers' compensation law, and she's the former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, Alice O'Sullivan. She lives in Oregon now, but still is here to try to help you. Her cell phone is 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314, until 9 p.m. Today, April 27th, 9 p.m. Pacific time. Criminal law, Jeff Hayden, who is the vice chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. Landlord-tenant law and employment law, Sam Wu. Estate planning, probate, Amy Harrington. Tax law, real estate, he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. And tomorrow, if you are being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to speak with you. That's Thursday, April 28th from 8 a.m. to noon. His number is 800-477-3111. 800-477-3111. No obligation on your part whatsoever. And again, Call a Lawyer night number is 800-525-9917. If you tune in a little bit late, let me tell you who my guests are. Shannon Morgan, Health Services Manager, and Nicole Fernandez, Supervisor of Training and Outreach of San Mateo County's, this is in California, by the way, Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Region. When I say California, by the way, because the program now is uplisted to the National Public Radio Satellite for national distribution. Dan Murphy, who's an elder abuse litigation attorney, he's also a member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. And certainly, last but certainly not least, is Tara Heumann, Deputy District Attorney, Abuse Unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. And we're going to talk with Judy now. Judy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm aware of a situation where a woman's family does know what's going on, and it's her granddaughter. And the woman makes it very clear that she does not want any outsiders interfering in her situation, even though she complains about it all the time. It's an extremely dysfunctional and codependent family. And I think in some cases it would actually be worse for an outsider to get involved in a situation, or not to get involved, but to call adult services. I think sometimes it would do more harm than good. And I'd like to hear your feedback.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. Okay. Thank you for that that very difficult question, I think, Judy. You can turn your radio back up. Who would want to start with that? You want to start,
yeah,
Tara?
I can respond to that. I think that's a great question that you raise. And these are sensitive issues in any family situation. So these are sensitive issues for child abuse cases, for domestic violence, and elder abuse really falls into the same kind of family. These are intimate relationship cases, and there are costs and benefits of referring these matters to either Adult Protective Services or law enforcement. And I think that those of us in the law enforcement community, I can speak for those folks, have to be extra sensitive to what are the wishes of the victim and the family. And we definitely try to take that into account in what we do. We're not going to prosecute a case or run after an abuser to destroy a family, to cause such strife. The goal is to bring people together and to restore the dignity of the elder, to try and restore the assets, and hopefully to get help for the abuser. And whether that, you know, includes some punishment so that he or she realizes that what he or she did is wrong and won't be tolerated by the family, or it may be a drug abuse problem, and through the criminal prosecution process we can get mandated drug or alcohol treatment. So the goal ultimately in the end of the day is accountability for the healing of the family. It's not to tear people apart, but we try to be extra sensitive to those needs in our family justice units.
I hope, Judy, that you found that was a good response and helpful to you.
May I add something, Chuck?
Sure, go ahead.
From a social services standpoint,
this is Shannon, by the way.
APS and even EDAP, Elder Independent Adult Protection Team services, are all voluntary. So if you have an individual where a social worker is knocking on a door to investigate a report, an elder can say, I do not wish to participate in this investigation. It's very unfortunate, but that happens. So we do have to respect that person's wish because they are a independent adult and they can make their own decisions. But what I like to train staff to do is respect their wishes, but to see if we can offer some resources, send something in the mail, give them some tips, but ultimately having to walk away and respect their decisions. But 9 times out of 10, usually those cases come right back around.
All right. For those of you who still have some questions, some comments, please feel free to join us on our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And Call a Lawyer is 800-525-9917. Again, those attorneys who are in the conference room here at the station, KLW in San Francisco, this is kind of a labor of love for them. Some of these people have been doing this for years, and so feel comfortable to call in. We do this. We've done this for years and years and years. It's not that I'm trying to get any kind of work for attorneys. This is a benefit to you if you have a problem where you can get at least a chance to talk to an attorney off the air, no obligation whatsoever, and to try to give you some direction of what you might do next. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. This is an example of what's going on, at least in San Francisco, and I'll talk about San Mateo County in just a moment. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar Association, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, of course, during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you are in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone experienced in your area of problem. Set you up for half an hour consultation with the attorney. And with rare exception throughout California, for a half an hour consultation, you'll pay $25 to $35. It's a great investment to try to give you some idea of what you should be doing, if anything, your rights and your obligations, etc. All right, we have Justin. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Justin, are you there? What happened to Justin? Oh, I'm sorry, it's Pamela. I'm sorry. Pamela, you don't sound like Justin. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Pardon me,
the show. It's very informative. I have since had my mother pass on, but the information that you've given is really very commonsensical, and something happened to me which came from out of left field and really threw me while I was in the midst of caring for my mother. This is back in 2011. I had been prepared as her power of attorney for both health care and for financial issues, so I had all that paperwork in place. And then what happened was I found out when a difficult sibling interfered that what needed to happen was that a certificate of incompetency needed to be signed by her doctor in order to trigger those power of attorney documents. Do you have anything to comment on that?
Dan, if you would, please.
Well, I believe what you're referring to is a power of attorney that springs into effect on the incapacity of the principal. I think that what you're referring to instead of a certificate of incapacity is a declaration to support a conservatorship, which is, you know, in California, we determine capacity or lack of capacity according to a statutory scheme, Probate Code 810, 11, and 12. But there is a declaration, a judicial counsel form, that can be filled out by a doctor that complies with California's statutory scheme of defining capacity or the lack of capacity. And that certificate is usually, that declaration is usually used to support the opening of a conservatorship, but there may be other purposes for it.
Well, this happened in Wisconsin, so I know the show is happening in California, but this happened in Wisconsin, and like I say, I had been completely prepared as her power of attorney for finances and health care. I was named as the trustee in the will and the trust documents, and then when push came to shove, a difficult sibling was able to interfere with the financial arrangements because there had been no trigger. And so once I had the certificate of incompetence filed, then there was absolutely no interference that could occur by any other individual other than the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
That was me. So no one ever talks about the triggering of the powers of attorney, even though, you know, it's mm-hmm. clear people understand that you need to prepare with the power of attorney mm-hmm. document. I found that I was surprised and taken right out of left field by this triggering mm-hmm. document that needed to happen that no one ever discussed while I was, you know, talking to the social workers and the bankers and the lawyers and so forth and so on.
Well, I thank you for bringing this up. Dan, go ahead.
I just wanted to add that that did probably come out of left field, but when you create a power of attorney that is durable, meaning that it will continue if the principal loses capacity, many times those springing powers of attorney require two doctors to sign off on the person has lost capacity. And that's the step, I think, that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I can't comment under Wisconsin law, but here in California, if you know, when those documents were prepared, I would hope the attorney would have explained them to the elder and maybe the family.
And probably it should be in the document, it would seem to me.
Well,
I'm not an estate planning attorney, but it would seem to me to have people pay attention to what's going on. There should be some wordage in there that for this to take effect, that there needs to be a doctor or doctors who prepare a declaration or whatever we want to call it of incapacity.
Right. And usually when an estate plan is prepared by a professional and given to a client, it contains an integration letter that explains the documents and how they work together and what to do in situations like this. So, again, I think it comes back to all of us need to think very carefully about the elder, because sometimes they can't keep up with what we think is going on.
And we think, most of us, I'm not a layperson in the law by any means, but most people who are laypersons really are very naive of what the law is all about.
They are.
And that's why we have to be aggressive. If you take your elder in to see an attorney or a doctor, your elder probably needs an advocate. And you start thinking about, what are the questions I should ask?
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you, Pamela, for bringing that up. It's a very good comment that you made and a very good question. Thanks so much. Appreciate your calling. All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night where we have some attorneys. I hope there are many of you calling in, 800-525-9917. For them in the areas of immigration law, family law, workers' compensation law. That's Alice O'Sullivan. She'll be available at her home in Oregon. And here's her number, 510-333-3314. Criminal law, landlord-tenant law, estate planning, probate, tax law, real estate. Tomorrow, Leon Bayer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk to you. No obligation on your part whatsoever. He'll be available tomorrow, April 28th, 8 a.m. to noon, 1-800-477-3111. All right. We have Justin. Welcome to the program.
All right. Thanks for having the program.
Sure.
My question is about reverse mortgages. My parents are in their 70s. They own their own house. They've always had the same house. The mortgage is paid off. They're on Social Security and a small retirement, very modest. And now my dad is trying to talk my mom into a reverse mortgage.
Yeah.
And I've heard some people bring up some red lights about that kind of a thing. I don't know too much about it, but I thought maybe your guess. Is that something we should be concerned about?
They haven't done it yet, Justin.
No, they haven't done it yet.
Have they seen a lawyer about this at all?
I'm not sure.
Where do your parents live?
They're in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, okay. Well, they need, I think, to get some specific advice before they get involved with a reverse mortgage. They need to get some specific advice in Massachusetts from, let's say, in my opinion, an attorney who knows something about estate planning who hopefully is knowledgeable about reverse mortgages. Dan, what would you say?
I was just going to add, Chuck, that reverse mortgages are the most expensive credit you can get. It might work in a very few cases. But
which cases would it work?
well, that's a whole program, Justin, which we don't have. No, I'm serious. It's a whole program that we don't have time to do right now, and I will do something like this in the future. But reverse mortgages are something that people need to be very, very careful about, and I highly recommend, if you can, advise your parents that they go very cautiously on this and that they get some independent advice from an attorney who has nothing to do with reverse mortgages, is not involved with accommodating your parents and entering into a reverse mortgage, but will give them the rundown on this. Tara, do you have any thoughts about this too?
You know, no, I don't have any. I don't have any experience working with reverse mortgages, so I'm loath to give an opinion.
Okay.
But I would just sort of echo what you had said, Chuck, which is to proceed cautiously. I know it is a financial tool that works for some people in certain circumstances, but it can be risky. And it can be costly. So I would offer the same advice that you
Shannon, do you have some comments about this?
It's out of my scope of practice, but I agree with what Tara and Daniel have said.
My feeling about this to begin with is I'm sure in Massachusetts they have, as we have in California, bar associations depending on where you live, lawyer referral services. Tell your parents to start off with maybe a simple, I'm assuming, that Massachusetts has a lawyer referral service where you can call and make an appointment to meet with an attorney who knows something about, let's say, estate planning, because that's really what your parents are looking at, really.
So you're suggesting a lawyer that they're not already affiliated with?
Well, I don't know that. If your parents have a lawyer that they are already affiliated with, if that's what you're saying, then unless they have already counseled with their attorney about this, they certainly should see their attorney if there is one who exists. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I know they have. You know, they have someone that they go to.
And for what reason, do you know?
No.
Okay. I think if I may, Justin, I think you need to talk with your parents very carefully and say, what does this attorney, what experience does this attorney have? Is this a real estate attorney? Is this an estate planning attorney? Is this a Social Security attorney? Try to find out what it is, and I think you need to do some research yourself on this, at least using the California law as an opportunity.
Yeah, certainly I'm going to do my due diligence, and that's
yeah,
that's what this phone call was too. I just figured I'd.
And you know, there may be I can't think of a source for you to go to at this point, but one of my assistants here, Martin McLean, what you might you know, this it's a great idea. Martin McLean, who helped me on the program, he's my associate producer. He says try Google search for law clinic reverse mortgage, Boston, Massachusetts. I think Martin already Googled this. But knowing him, he's nodding his head up and down. That means yes. I know you all can see him, of course. Search for Law Clinic Reverse Mortgage, Boston, Massachusetts. See if you
what
can.
What was the second word? Law what?
Law Clinic, CLINIC.
Got it.
Yeah. Reverse Mortgage. Yeah, educate yourself about this a bit. And look for that. Google search for Law Clinic Reverse Mortgage, Boston, Massachusetts. See what there is on the website. Educate yourself about this. And then start talking with your parents and telling them how careful they must be about this. Okay?
Right on. Okay.
Okay, Justin. Good luck. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for calling. Our toll-free number, again, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And call a lawyer night where you can talk with any one of our really fine attorneys who are here to serve you. not just to eat the pizza, which I order, although they do like it. They do like it. It's 1-800-525-9917. And I want to thank them for immigration law, Gene Swervelove, for family law, Janet Frankel, certified specialist in family law, for workers' compensation law, certified specialist Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's in Oregon now, but she will talk with you until 9 p.m. tonight, April 27th at 510-333-3314. For criminal law, Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law. He's vice chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. Landlord-tenant law and employment law, Sam Wu. Estate planning and probate, Amy Harrington. This is Amy's first time here. Tax law, real estate broker, Frank Adam, and tomorrow, Leon Baer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, who will talk with you. Again, no obligation on your part whatsoever. This will be Thursday, April 28th, 8 a.m. to noon, 1-800-477-3111. And for all of you listening, let me remind you that usually on the fourth Wednesday of the month, we do Call a Lawyer Night, where you, wherever you may be, anywhere in the United States, if you can remember this, Pacific time between 7 and 8 p.m., and you have a question, it's 1-800-525-9917. All right, we have a few minutes left of the program. What thoughts do you want, Tara, what thoughts do you want to get? Wait a minute, Nicole.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Nicole raised her hand first.
Yeah, so, go ahead, Nicole.
Okay, Nicole.
Sorry.
Go ahead, dear.
I just wanted to say that Justin's phone call was a great exemplification of how difficult it is to initiate phone a conversation between parents, children, and elders about money. There's so much emotion that is intertwined with money, and so many of the issues that we're facing today with the fraud and people taking advantage and isolation could be headed off with education and having very difficult discussions. If you think that you would have a very difficult time talking about this topic with your parents, there are elder care mediators out there that can also mediate the conversation between siblings who have different priorities for their parents as they age.
How do you find an
just
elder?
Just Google elder care mediator.
Elder care mediator.
And there are different certifications, so and there's a different pricing, but that might be something you might want to talk about.
When you say a certification, who's certifying them?
You know, I don't. There are different
really?
Professional associations.
So you want to make sure that
you want to make sure it's in good standing.
Someone is okay.
Yes.
All right. Very
but
good.
But that is an alternative to initiate
terrific.
The conversation.
Great comment, Tara. You had something you wanted to say.
Yes. I was just going to jump in, and I wanted to make sure that we mentioned just a few simple tips for seniors. Just to proceed with caution, simple things, but they can make all the difference. You know, please don't make an investment in any kind of company without getting a second opinion. So, you know, talk to a friend or someone that you trust. And then things as simple as don't be afraid to close the door or hang up the phone on somebody that you don't know.
Yeah. Hanging up the phone can be easier than you think.
Yeah. And that can make all the difference because somebody you let someone start talking and they are incredibly ingratiating. They are bright. They have tremendous social skills and they know exactly what to say to prey on whatever vulnerabilities you may have. And before you know it, you're getting sucked into a conversation with somebody.
And
you don't know.
You may regret it.
Exactly.
Years ago, I handled a case a number of years ago as a deputy district attorney for San Mateo County about this little lady who was a widow. She lived in, I believe it was Burlingame, which is in California. Her home was free and clear. She got a call from someone who represented himself as the attorney for the Canadian Lottery. He told her she had won $500,000, and what she needed to do before they would send her the check is pay the taxes, and the taxes would be $100,000. This woman, and she lived by herself, she had two credit cards where she could issue checks. Yes, believe it or not, two credit cards where she could issue checks totaling $100,000. She sent them to this address in Canada. A few days later, the same guy representing himself as the lawyer for the Canadian Lottery, he said, "Oh, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. You won $1,000,000. But again, before we can send you the check, you need to pay the additional taxes." And in the process, she began to look into mortgaging her free and clear home. We were able to stop this. However, I must tell you, even with the help of the FBI and the Royal Mounted Police, I'm serious, we never found this guy. Yeah. So she lost $100,000 but didn't lose $200,000. So this is something you've got to be really careful about. We have, as I see it here, Rose, I think you may be our last caller. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. This is a great program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have a friend who is going through something where her granddaughter, through student loans, her granddaughter got a hold of her Social Security card.
Ooh.
And then she proceeded to rent an apartment in Atlanta with the Social Security card, but the actual rental agent never got a hold of the grandmother, and so the granddaughter moves out and leaves all these charges, and this woman never signed anything, but these people are on her about paying this money that's owed because the granddaughter just went and applied for an apartment with her name and her credit, and of course her credit was great.
Rose, let me interrupt. Let me interrupt you for a moment. You meant to say she got hold of a credit card, not the Social Security card.
Social Security. I'm sorry, a Social Security number, which is what's scary.
I have never heard of someone being able to rent an apartment with
this
a Social
Security. Atlanta, Georgia.
Really? Okay, I've never heard
happened.
Of that. I've never heard
and
of that.
And now they're on her about they want the fees which are accruing every day around this, what the granddaughter left on the books at this housing unit.
Rose, your friend needs to contact the police. Where does your friend live?
Well, she actually lives here in San Francisco.
Okay. Your friend needs to contact the police or the district attorney's office.
Here in San Francisco?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That's where it should start. That's where it should start. And is your friend living all by herself, or does she have anyone who might be an
She lives alone.
Okay, I want you to consider being her advocate.
Mm-hmm.
That means you urge her to make a report with both, I feel, the police department, San Francisco Police Department, as well as the district attorney's office. I would suggest that she file a complaint not only with the police department but with the district attorney's office.
Okay.
And get them going on this. This is obviously something that your friend needs to do, and I suspect that without your help she won't do anything.
No, she's very afraid of getting her granddaughter in trouble.
Yeah. Well, how much money is involved?
Well, it's gone up to now. It's close to $5,000.
Oh, okay. No, please urge your friend to report this. We have essentially just about run out of time, everybody. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Rose, very much for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your calling. Well, I want to thank my guests here because we've had a great program. Tara Heumann, Deputy District Attorney, Abuse Unit, San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Shannon Morgan, Health Services Manager, and Nicole Fernandez, Supervisor of Training and Outreach, San Mateo County's Elder and Dependent Adult Protection Team. And Dan Murphy, Elder Abuse Litigation Attorney and member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. Thank you all.
Thank you, Chuck.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay, now next week I'm going to tell you we're going to be doing a discussion of the California Board of Legal Specialization and certified specialization in areas of the law and the importance of certified legal specialization for consumers of legal services. My guests will be Natalie Leonard, Director of Legal Specialization, Richard Gogne, the Chair, and Jeff Hayden, the Vice Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. That's for next week. And I hope that you will join us for that. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Program engineer is Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Thanks, both of you. And thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. And join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney. Bye.